Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to Today We Learn number 35. I'm Dan Casey, and this is the last time you're going to be hearing my voice this episode. Yes, that's right. Unfortunately, I was not able to sit down with Razzle and our guest today. I was out of town last weekend at Coachella. Yes, I know, Coachella. Sounds weird, but it was a lot of fun. I was sent there for work. I'd never been before, always wanted to go. Saw some incredible bands. In particular, if you like electronic music, I recommend checking out Galantis. They were a fun new group I got to see. But more importantly, today's episode, you guys, I'm really bummed because I wanted to be there. Oh, quick sidebar. If you were at WonderCon this weekend and came by to see us at the Nerdist booth, thank you so much for visiting. Got to talk to some of you guys who listened to the podcast. It was really cool. Really appreciate it. Thank you again for listening. Now, back to the matter at hand, today's show. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, I was not there because today's guest is super rad. Duncan Birmingham came by. You may know him as a writer-producer on IFC's Marin. He's a really funny guy. They talked about some pretty good stuff. I'm not going to tell you what they talked about because what's the point of spoiling what you're about to listen to? More importantly, sit down, sit back, relax. You've had a long weekend. Why not kick your week off on a good note? With a brand new episode of Today We Learned, we have no sponsor this week. We are a no-man's zone, a demilitarized zone of comedy and education in a delightful, soft-serve twist cone of a podcast. I don't know where this metaphor is going, but the point is, you are listening to Today We Learned, number 35, with Duncan Birmingham. Bye-bye.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
I was in New Orleans for New Orleans for, I would say, a total of maybe 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I'll tell you the story. And it's a fun story, and we're rolling, obviously. That's how we do things.
Seamless.
Here. We do seamless. But,
hold on, let me straighten up.
I'm glad we are, because this is a funny story. So, 2001. March of 2000, February, actually it'll be February of 2001. My friend Justin, our buddy Paul, and my brother Jeremy, who listens to this podcast. I don't think I've told this story before. My brother and I are very close. So I bring my brother up a lot. It's like a drinking game on this podcast. Anytime I say I'm not a scientist or my brother, blah, 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 blah. But anyways, so February of 2001, it was spring break. Now, only me and my buddy Justin, we went to a community college up in Michigan called Delta College. We were the only ones in college. It was like we were fresh out. You know, we graduated. We were like 19 or whatever.
Yeah.
We graduated high school in 2000. So it was literally that semester or whatever, that year after we graduated. And spring break is coming up. We have no plans. So my brother and my buddy Paul and we were like, we knew everybody going down to Panama City Beach, right? Everybody's
nice.
Like, oh, everybody's, you know. And last minute, we're like, my grandmother lives in Alabama, okay? Well, she lives in Florida now, but at the time, she lived in Alabama, and she was down with her sister.
You don't want to go to Alabama for spring break.
No. So they were down in, it's a long story, but it's pretty funny just because. So anyways, so my grandmother was already down in Panama City with her sister just hanging out and doing old people stuff. So I call my grandmother, and I'm like, and we, because all the hotels for spring break were sold out. So my grandmother was down there, and we had her book us a room at this hotel, which thought that it was going to be old people staying there. So they ended up booking us, getting the room and everything. Four 19, 20-year-old kids show up in this hotel. It's like, whoa, wait a minute here. And we're like, hey, we're good, whatever. So she booked us the room, and then like 2 days later, we ended up driving down and for spring break in Panama City Beach. Now, where New Orleans comes into play is we're having fun, we're partying, we're doing our thing. I don't drink alcohol, but I still like to have fun. Like, I don't do drugs or drink. I'm sober. I live in Sobertown, but I still like to have a good time and party, especially with spring break.
Okay, and your buddies did.
And my buddies do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. My friends, they're a huge party, which is one of the scariest things down there. We rented these mopeds, and there's a bridge down in Panama City Beach that is way too steep, and it's a highway, so we weren't supposed to take these mopeds, these sprees on the bridge. We got going really fast. It was really dangerous. But anyways, long story short, to shorten the story up, we're down in Panama City Beach, and fast forward to we get there on like a Sunday, and we're there hanging out and beaching it up, and you know, on Sunday, and then on Monday, and then on Tuesday we're like, oh, it's Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras is going on today. They got New Orleans is a huge party, and this is before iPhones, this is before all of that shit. We don't have, you know, we have MapQuest, but that's from when we have a computer before we drove down there. Or
right,
whatever.
You print it out.
We printed it out. So we're looking at these atlases. Now, for the young kids listening to this podcast, atlases are big books of maps you keep under your seat in your car. We had these. That's all we had. And we are not very good with distances. So we're looking at Panama City Beach to New Orleans, Louisiana, and we're like, oh, this doesn't look that far. We're asking gas station attendants and all that. And we're like,
You're measuring with your fingers.
We're taking like pencils scale. And doing, you know, we're trying to MacGyver the scales.
That is old school.
Yeah, yeah. And we're like, oh, this isn't like a 4-hour drive. This is only like a 2.5. Our math is completely, because Panama City's kind of in the panhandle anyways. So it's right by like Alabama and Georgia and all, and all that. So we're looking and we're like, oh, it's New Orleans isn't that far. Let's drive to Mardi Gras. It's Fat Tuesday. We left at like 6 or something like that because we were making use of the full day. And it's not 4 hours for those of you listening. It's like 7 to 8 hours. It's a long motherfucking trip. Now, we hit the biggest traffic jam. It was one of the major highways. I think it was the 10. It was pitch dark out, foggy as fuck because we were in Mississippi or Louisiana. We just got into Louisiana. There was this huge traffic jam because there was this horrific wreck, right? We're talking like a mile of a wreck. Like there were cars scattered throughout a mile on this highway. It's pitch dark. Everybody's out of their cars walking around.
Everybody's going to Fat Tuesday.
Everybody's walking around because there's no traffic, right? And it's so foggy. You can't see 10 feet in front of you. You don't know. Like, this is how scary this highway was. You stroll up to, like, the cement abutments where, like, on the sides of the highway, and you look down. You couldn't tell if you were 4 feet above a swamp or 100 feet above the swamp. That's how freaky it was. It was like, where are we? It was like a horror movie. It was like a dream. So anyways, that cleared up. We ended up pulling into New Orleans at 12:20 on Fat Tuesday night. 12:20. So 20 minutes after 12 on Fat Tuesday, which technically is Wednesday. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Mardi Gras, it shuts down at 12 a.m. on Ash Wednesday. We're talking about cops come by and usher everybody inside at 12 o'clock. Like at 12:01, the streets in New Orleans are empty as fuck. So we stroll in at 12:20 and there's just beads hanging from trees. Nobody is anywhere. It was
a ghost
town. It was a ghost town. So we drove like 8 hours to get to New Orleans for nothing. And then we turned around and we got back.
You didn't even spend the night?
No, there was no point because there's nothing.
There were no stragglers?
There's no stragglers. Mardi Gras was shut down, so we're just like, fuck this, let's go back to Panama City. So we did. So anyways, that's my New Orleans story.
I lived in Florida, so when you said that it was only a few hours away, I was like, oh my God, did I miss every Mardi Gras? I could have been like driving from Florida there.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how long it was either. I was South Florida.
We're in Florida.
I was like Boca and Delray Beach, Boynton Beach. I mean, that tacks on an extra 6 hours.
Yeah.
But,
my grandmother now lives in Weekiwachee.
Okay.
40 minutes north of Tampa or whatever, right off the 50.
The highway 50.
I used to live in Orlando for a bit.
New Orleans was awesome. I did the thing everyone says not to do the first night, which is don't go places you don't know where you are. So I got drunk. I was on my bike and I ran out of my cell phone ran out of juice, and I was just riding around for I don't know. It's hard to a good hour and a half on neighborhoods, people sitting on their porches. And I was like, I don't know if this is a good neighborhood or a bad neighborhood. Yeah. And then I went by this porch just full of people trying to play it cool, and I wiped out.
No. There's no cool way to
there's
fall.
There's no cool way to fall. I tried to make it look like I did it on purpose, but why would someone do that?
Yeah.
Anyway, but it was great. It was a great great week. I found the house.
You found where you were going after an hour of traversing the streets. Mm-hmm. On a
bicycle. Yeah, I got to know the city. I got to know the city at 3 in the morning, and nothing bad happened. Yeah, I had a great experience there.
That's awesome.
As opposed to, it's funny, this neighborhood, I used to live down the street. My first apartment in L.A. was right down the street on Curson, and I got, it was the only time in my life I've been mugged.
Oh, wow.
So that wasn't fun.
Yeah.
So I think about that every time I'm on this blog.
I've never been mugged, knock on wood.
I thought I was one of those people. I like to think I was one of those people that's like, oh yeah, I guess I just have that persona where like nobody's gonna, they're like, oh, I'll wait till the next guy. I'm not gonna mess with that guy. Yeah. And I can still kind of rationalize that because the guy didn't see me. I was in my car and I pulled into my car hole, my like cubby hole, and there was this kind of angry guy standing there. And just in my mind, I was like, oh, this guy looks lost or angry. Yeah. And just as I was thinking, maybe I shouldn't open the door, I'd opened it a little bit. He jerked the door open.
Oh, wow. So he was right there when you pulled in.
Yeah, he was all drunk or you know, on drugs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't think anything, you know, he just seemed like he wanted the money. I'd had a few margaritas.
Yeah.
This is 13 years ago when I moved out here. I'd been at El Coyote. But he had a gun. He put it right to my temple, and I got it down on the ground. I gave him the wallet, and then he was very smart. He took my car keys.
Yeah.
Because then, I mean, I drunkenly would have, you know, I shouldn't be driving anyway, but chased him down maybe or could have gotten into my apartment to call the police. So the fact that he took my keys really slowed me down. Whatever, I called the police, they came, you know, they can't really do anything. But really it wasn't that bad because somebody found my wallet 20 minutes later. I had my wallet back with, you know, he took my credit card and $5.
Yeah.
And that was about it. And then the keys was what kind of screwed me because then I was like, should I change my locks out of my car?
Yeah.
And I was like, he's not going to remember. But then I was always kind of thinking, this guy might be like sleeping in the back of my car someday.
Yeah, or looked at your driver's license, found out where you live, broken into your apartment.
Right. Well, the landlord changed the locks in the apartment.
Yeah.
So the most dangerous thing about being mugged was then I bought the club because I figured, well, I got to lock my car somehow. Yeah. I'm not going to change my keys for this asshole. Yeah. I bought the club. This is so stupid. I can't believe I'm even going to say it, but I bought it. And then I was driving and I was looking at it and I was like, is this thing going to fit my car? I can't. And then I was like, oh, I was at a stoplight. I was like, oh, I see it. It widens. It widens to fit. And as I widened it, I clicked it onto my wheel.
No.
It was locked. So I had the key, but it's in the deep, deep plastic of the package. And I'm like, all of a sudden the light changes and
people are
like, oh, fuck. And so I just start driving with the club.
So it's drivable.
I was like, I'll just keep driving. And then I was on Hollywood Boulevard just till I get to a residential neighborhood. And then I'll just turn. And then once I was like, all right, I'll turn into this driveway. You can't turn it, though. You can't. So then it was like me jiggling it, people beeping, honking. People can see I've got the club on my car. And they're like, what? I could tell people were calling on their cell phones.
Yeah.
It took me, you know, a little while to get the
So keys. You can't even do a slight curve to the side and park at a meter?
No, I thought I could, but you can't. And I was terrified that a cop was going to come by in like the 10 minutes it took me to get the key free, and I was going to be on some kind of whatever, America's Dumbest Home Video. I mean, it was really dumb. It was probably the dumbest thing I've ever done.
Close.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb.
For those of you listening, we haven't had an actual introduction. We started. But anyways, I want to thank everybody for listening to another episode of Today We Learned. My name is Razzle. Dan is missing today. He had a last-minute meeting he couldn't get out of. But with us is the very awesome, very funny Duncan Birmingham.
Thanks for having me.
For those of you who don't know Duncan, he's very funny on Twitter. He's a writer and executive producer on IFC's hit show Marin with Mark Maron. It's a very funny show.
Huge hit. Airs May 8th.
Yes. The new season's coming up May 8th. Which is this will come out on Monday, so you guys got 2 weeks to set 2 or 3 weeks to set your TiVos and record it. All the funny parts are Duncan's. I'm just gonna assume it's his.
Of course. Order your IFC. I actually have to order IFC.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to TiVo something the other night on. I was like, oh, I don't have this channel anymore, so I should probably get that.
Put that in your to do list.
That write off. IFC write off.
Yeah. Right. So he's with us today joining us. We're going to have a nice little fun chat. I mentioned this last night to you, we'd like to start off every show with either the guest providing a fact about themselves or something they learned recently. What do you got for us today, Duncan?
Well, you know, I guess this is, you'd call this a little historical anecdote, although it is true. I heard a little bit on the radio, and then I looked it up, and I just thought it was interesting. Hopefully you don't already know this, but there was some controversy when the telephone was invented.
Okay.
Because obviously no one had used one before. It didn't exist. And there was no etiquette of what to say when you call someone on the phone. So It was Alexander Graham Bell, who invented it, wanted people to say ahoy.
Ahoy.
Like, use a nautical term.
Really?
The word hello was not, it was around. Hello was kind of more like, look at this. It wasn't like, hi did not exist.
Really?
So hello is a little more obscure. So Alexander Graham Bell invented the phone. He was suggesting ahoy.
Ahoy.
And then it was Edison who, he didn't invent the phone, but he did make some improvements to it. He was the one, he was really pushing for hello.
Hello.
He was really gung-ho for hello. And so there was a little bit, of a war, and obviously Alexander Graham Bell lost. So he invented the phone, but he lost the small battle of what to say.
What to say.
And I just thought that was interesting. What really cinched it was when the first telephone book came out, they had instructions on how to use your new, invention. And the telephone book said, we suggest using the term hello.
That's
cinched it for Alexander Graham Bell. And then they also suggested, I guess this didn't last long, that when you end the call, you say, that is all.
That is all.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was very interesting. That's back when, too, when you had like a phone number was like 6-2000 or whatever, like Pennsylvania 6-5000 or like that song, that old song. But that's interesting, because hello wasn't a common term. Like, when you see somebody on the street, you weren't like, oh, hello, how you doing? It wasn't that type of thing.
It wasn't that. It was like a little more obscure what I read. It was more like if you dropped your hat on the street, hello, I have a problem. It was more like an exclamation.
Hello, good sir. Would you like some turkey? Or
and obviously, hi wasn't hello. Even around.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting because it kind of seemed to be one of the first examples I could think of tech kind of informing how we deal with each other in real life and meet space. I mean, it's kind of like if we were 14-year-old girls, we say LOL.
Yeah. Or like now texting. when my brother calls me or any friends, it's like, hey, or yeah, what do you need? Or like when my mom calls me, I'll pick up and I'll just be like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like what? Like, and we love like origin stories on this show like that because you take things like that for granted, and you're just, our whole lives they had phones. I mean, I remember when my grandmother had a rotary phone, back before, I remember when cordless phones with like the long antenna that would pick up hospital signals if you were too close, in Michigan at least, were a big thing. Like wireless phones or having two phone lines was a huge thing for a household. So that's really interesting. Like that's, at ahoy.
Ahoy.
We could be saying, oh, I'm going to start saying that. Ahoy.
I think Mr. Burns says that on the set. He says ahoy hoy, something like that. So I'm assuming that's a historical fact that Simpson writers know. And it also kind of reminded me, I don't know if you saw, there's like a Louis was on The Tonight Show, and it kind of went viral, the little thing about him talking about cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
Smartphones and how they, they're turning us into monsters, and he won't give one to his kids because they kind of, suck your empathy. Because, you can get on your smartphone, especially if you're a kid or Facebook or whatever, and, call someone a fat ass or a douchebag, but you don't have to deal with the repercussions of seeing the, fat kid cry in front of you. I'm always trying to think, I'm like, is technology and the internet, is it improving my life or is it like ruining my life?
It's such a paradigm. Because like is, I, as much as I love, like, here's the thing, my friends rip on me. My phone's never leaves my hand.
Yeah.
My phone is always in my hand. I'm always looking at my phone, and I'm a good multitasker, so I can like carry on conversations and do other things while I'm looking at my phone. But I'm a huge advocate of technology. I love it. But in the end, it's also making me more antisocial and making me, I mean, granted, I hate people as it is. I mean, I was driving here and it's like I'm glad I don't have superpowers because I would be a supervillain. Like that's how much like it upsets me. But it's one of those things where it's like, is it ruining civilization technology or does it make it better?
Yeah. It's tough. There's that photo circulating on the internet of what is it? It's like everybody in the 50s are on the subway and they're looking at the newspaper.
Yes,
they're like, all right. So it wasn't like people were sitting on the subway, having these super interesting discussions.
Yeah.
And I get now I read even books on my phone. So it just depends. Is everyone sitting there reading, War and Peace or playing Angry Birds or who knows?
Or is it, or like True Detective, is life just a flat circle?
I was obsessed in New Orleans with True Detective.
God damn.
We were going because I looked up the it's like the True Detective visit the spots.
Oh, no way.
Type places. So there was Carcosa, is called Fort Knox, and that's like 20 miles out of town. We didn't have a car though to go see that. What do we go see? We went by the tree, the big, you know,
oh, yeah.
tree, but we did see something. Hold on, I'll have to think.
Yeah.
We went to, everything felt like a little True Detective-y.
Oh, wow.
Like, I was like, if I was younger and was doing heavy drugs, I would have a very True Detective influenced trip in New Orleans.
The True Detective Star Tours.
Yeah.
This is where the murders happen.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's, well, here's while we're talking about, I guess, like history and all that and like advents of technology and stuff, here's a little fun fact I was finding out about smallpox, smallpox in itself isn't like technology, but this is an interesting thing about what they used to use, I guess, for trying to cure it or whatever. But variolation or inoculation is the most common term. Inoculation was the method first used to immunize an individual against smallpox. Now, for those of you that don't know, smallpox was an infectious disease caused by either of two virus variants, variola major and variola minor. The disease is also known by the Latin name variola or variola vera, derived from spotted or pimple. The disease was originally known in English as the pox or the red plague. The term smallpox was first used in Britain in the 15th century to distinguish variola from the great pox. Now here's where it gets interesting as far as trying to cure smallpox. Back in the day, the Chinese practiced the oldest documented use of inoculation dating back to the 15th century. They implemented a method of nasal insufflation administered by blowing powdered smallpox material,
oof,
usually the scabs of smallpox, up the nostrils. So I guess in a sense, like most virus vaccines or whatever, they're comprised of a little bit of the disease so that way your immune system can fight it and build up antibodies.
Like a flu shot.
Yeah. So I guess a way of doing this with smallpox was by inhaling some of the scab, so that way your immune system can, I guess, build up against it. So that kind of interested me. Now, like, in order to cure diseases now, what if there wasn't shots? What if you just had to snort stuff all the time? That's weird.
Yeah, you just have to snort some dead skin off someone who has whatever, cancer.
Yeah,
or
find
AIDS
some leper and snort. Do some lines of dead skin off his asshole or whatever. I don't know.
I'm even afraid. I've never done the flu shot thing. I kept meaning to go this year.
Yeah.
I know people who do it every year. I guess I'm always – it always seems like the wrong time where they're like, well, you could get a little flu. So I'm always like, oh, do I have time right now to get the flu for a day or two, or should I just roll the dice?
See, I've never had a flu shot that I can recall as in my adult life, but I also don't get sick.
Oh,
and I also attribute that to because like I don't like medicine. I try not to take medicine unless I got like a huge headache or whatever. But I feel like my antibodies, because I try not to do any of that stuff, they might just get strong. I'm not a scientist, but I feel like if you don't get a flu shot and you do get the flu, next time you're not going to get the flu because you're going to already know how to cure yourself of it.
Well, when was the last time you got sick enough, let's say, to stay home from
whatever? Yeah. I can't even remember.
Wow.
I can't. I mean, it's been a while. Like, I'll generally get, like, a cough once a year for, like, 3 days or 4 days, and it's like a cough. But I just attribute that to being like the regular, you know, it's like a yearly cough, like clockwork. Around beginning of February, I'll get a cough or whatever. But it's like 3 or 4 days, and that's about it. Like, it's just, you know, I've never been subdued to bed or, you know, wrapping up or eating soup or anything like that.
No, you're like Bruce Willis in Invincible.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the movie? Yeah.
Yeah, Invincible.
Jesus. Now, you think
I don't
part
know how
of that
to swim,
is,
though. No.
You think part of that is clean living? Is that you don't drink, no drugs, and what you're eating?
I eat healthy. I don't eat a lot of fast food. I hike and work out regularly. That's hiking and working out regularly is, I would say, over the last 2 years. But even, you know, from my 20s, I've never, you know, I've never really gotten sick. I'll get a headache on occasion, but that's generally a caffeine headache because I'm addicted to caffeine, so I always take caffeine.
That's the vice.
That's my
caffeine.
Vice is caffeine. But I don't know. I just attribute it to either healthy living or because I don't go see the doctor every time I have an ailment, you know, to get antibiotics or anything like that. I just, you know, let it let it fend itself off. I don't know. Then again, I'm also not hanging around hospitals or hanging around, you know, I don't know, places where a lot of sick people occur.
Well, I get sick. I'm not hanging around hospitals. the less I can, not at all. I try, if I see someone, you know what, my mechanic did this the other day and was like, tells me how, God, I'm feeling terrible, I'm awful, as he's shaking my hand.
Oh, no.
You know?
And That's so gross.
Now you
said you have a mechanic. Do you go to this mechanic regularly, or is this just like how you have in your back pocket, like how back in the day everybody's like, oh, I know a guy, or I have an acquaintance who does this. Is he?
He's my guy. He's my guy. I used to live right across the street from, I'll even say, High Tech Auto.
Okay.
Otherwise known as Coco's.
Okay.
And Coco and Eddie are my guys. I had a longtime agent for 13 years, and he would come from Beverly Hills with his Land Rover and go to Coco's. Okay. And I lived right across the street, so I was like, well, I guess if it's good enough for him and his classic Land Rover, it's good enough for me and my 1999 Cherokee, and I can just drop it off and walk home.
Yeah.
But they're good guys. They explain what's going on. They, you know, they clean the car. They helped a friend of mine just get a new car.
Okay.
My friend was looking for a car, and they found her a 2005 Passat.
Okay.
For $4,000.
So, oh, wow. Yeah. That's nice. I always had an old joke about mechanics, and it was, I can't remember it verbatim, but it had to do with, like, how come everybody, like, I don't know anything about cars. And every time I take my car to a mechanic, I always think they're trying to rape me. But I don't know anything about dental work. But every time I go to the dentist, I just take their word for it. Do you know what I mean? What's the difference between a dentist who knows what he's talking about and a mechanic who knows what he's talking about? And I just right away assume a mechanic is full of shit. But I take the dentist,
I guess, because because they're, well, just the way we think about professionals, since they are in the medical field and they kind of have a higher status, unfortunately. Yeah. But I think they all are. I mean, if I had to trust one or the other, I bet my dentist is ripping me off more than my mechanic.
Probably.
It's always like, I don't know what's going on. You know, they're always trying to get me the whitening and
upsell.
But the mechanic, the thing is with the mechanic, I feel like in theory, you could fake it, like you know what you're talking about. With the dentist, they know, you know, they have you over a barrel. Yeah. It's not like anybody has, like, dental work is their hobby.
Nobody's going on Wikipedia about how to fix that. Yeah. Crown molar.
I think that crown molar.
I can do that myself.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go to the dental store and pick up the supplies. Yeah. That's funny. Now earlier you mentioned you notice I have a Sam Rockwell quote, and I'm a bit of Sam Rockwell trivia here, which I pulled this up because of the new. There's a new Ninja Turtle movie coming out, and a lot of people are up in arms about whether how it looks or etc. I'm a huge fan of the Ninja Turtles. I'll take what I can get. I'm 32 years old, so I'm old enough to not have an opinion on what they change, because I'm 32.
Right.
I shouldn't care if he's wearing them. You know what? I shouldn't care what they look like or whatever. But anyways, Sam Rockwell was in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990. He played the head thug.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he was.
I didn't know that.
He played the head thug in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990. I think that's the first one. I think the first one came out in 1990. He was one of the thugs. Sammy Rocks.
Maybe I'll go back.
Yeah.
Since I am a fan.
I like him. He's a very talented actor.
I love that guy. I remember the year. I really like, friends of mine turned me on to that movie, Safe Men.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that. That's him. Paul Giamatti is like the heavy in it. He plays this, I think he's kind of a bad guy called Veal Chop.
Okay.
And then, who's the guy? He's on Treme. He was in that romantic comedy with Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, Gerard Butler. No.
No, he was in another movie called Happy Town. He's one of those guys. Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. I'll look
romantic
it up.
Romantic comedy.
He's one of those guys that never kind of broke big. He usually plays the best friend. Steve Zahn.
Steve Zahn, yeah. He was in
Just seems like a nice guy, Steve Zahn. Anyway, so the two of them are in it, and I think John Hamburg might have directed it. It's a pretty pretty goofy, weird comedy. Maybe it's like 99. So I always liked him from that. And then I was a huge Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Damn, that
fan.
Movie is, he's so good in that movie as Chuck Barris. He's so good.
I haven't seen it since it came out because I don't want to be disappointed in it, but I remember seeing it and being like, dude, George Clooney is like a genius in the Charlie Kaufman script, although I guess Charlie Kaufman didn't like the movie, but I just thought it was awesome.
Sam Rockwell was so good in that movie and in Matchstick Men too with Nick Cage. He was really good in that.
Oh, I forgot all about that movie.
And then then Moon, obviously. Have you seen Moon?
I love Moon.
Moon is so good.
I love Moon, and then and then one of my favorite, just as far as like actor movies, Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Yeah,
if you've seen that one. I mean, everybody was, there was like just a smorgasbord of like cool
Let's
character
cool
actors
people,
with great facial hair.
Yeah, that was a good movie too.
Now, I don't, just remember, what is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles controversy? Because is this the first one since the 1990? Or?
No, there's been three. Well, there's been a lot. There was
out of the loop.
Yeah, there's been I would say three or four. There's been three live ones, and then there was another animated one, and then there was like the cartoon and all that. But there's a new one. It's produced by Michael Bay, and a lot of people were originally up in arms because they thought the Ninja Turtles were going to be aliens instead of like mutated turtles. Then they have nostrils. They have like noses. The Ninja Turtles have noses now, which is apparently turtles don't have noses.
I did know that.
So
okay.
So I guess people are like, oh, they look creepy or whatever. And it's like, but they're mutated turtles anyway. So why can't they have new features?
Yeah.
You know, and like their masks and stuff are weird and. People are up in arms about like all sort. I mean, any Ninja Turtle nerd is like has something to complain about. Which, you know, to each their own. Whatever floats your boat. You know, I complain about some Batman things here and there. But then again, it's like, look, I'll take what I can get because it's keeping the industry going. It's keeping me entertained. Whatever. I mean, I always attribute like comic book movies to like campfire stories that are retold by other people, and they always change it or add over the years.
Oh, I love that. That's,
do you know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, you still have the basis of it, but. You know, you're not going to remember, you know, if you're retelling it, you got to put a new spin on it of some sort.
Yeah.
So.
And you never know. I remember when I was a kid and Michael Keaton was going to be Batman and people were flipping
out. Yeah, because he was a comedic actor at the time.
And he was awesome.
He was awesome.
Like the best Batman.
He's the best Batman in my opinion. So.
He was great, but people went crazy.
People went ape shit.
Yeah.
He was just in Mr. Mom, I think. And then that's when he got, Mr. Mom and then Beetlejuice. And then they were like, oh, what?
Why isn't that guy in more movies? It's crazy.
He's so good. Well, he took a break for a while. RoboCop. I mean, I seen it just because Michael Keaton. I'm a huge Michael Keaton fan. I seen it just because he was in it. And it is what it is. But he's got a new movie coming out called like Birdman or something like that, where he plays like a former superhero turned Broadway play. I don't know exactly what it is, but from what I remember reading about it, it looks pretty cool. And I mean, I'll see anything with Michael Keaton just because he was in Need for Speed and he was awesome for that. I didn't realize he was in it, but he was like the little bit he was in it. It made it even better because he's Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Michael Keaton. Like he's a great actor. But he's still Michael Keaton, and it's like, goddamn, Michael Keaton is so good.
Yeah.
Like, I could watch Michael Keaton be Michael Keaton doing anything.
Yeah.
And I would enjoy it.
And it's great. It's not like he's one of those guys who, like, you know, got fat and, you know, he's like, he's a good-looking guy for his age.
Aside
so he took a break.
Some hair and thin. Yeah. He still looks relatively the same.
I mean, he did it all. He did
the
I remember, Clean and Sober.
That was good.
That opening where he's calling his parents for money and he's, or no, the girl ODs in his bed. And he was just so good. And that was like a one-man show.
So good in that movie. Mr. Mom, obviously, the Dream Team. Was he in the Pelican Brief? Was he in that, or was he in the paper? Was he in the paper?
Well, he was in the paper.
Ron Howard did the paper. That was a good one.
Yep. Night Shift.
Night Shift is so goddamn good. Steve Blazowski.
And
I'm an idea man.
Right. And then he was in those two movies where he was the same character. Those two Elmore Leonard adaptations.
Yeah.
And that was really what the point where I was like, oh, why am I not getting more Michael Keaton? Because he was in them both.
Yeah.
But like they weren't
as
like,
the same character.
Yeah,
one was
great
Quentin
roles.
Tarantino's. Jackie Brown. And then the other one was that one with George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez, right?
Right. That one was great. What the hell was
and
that?
And he was in
the Soderbergh movie.
And he played the same character, the same cop.
But neither of them was like a juicy role.
No,
it was like, why did Michael Keaton, you know, sign on for this?
Hollywood give Michael Keaton more roles.
Yeah.
Out of sight.
Out of sight.
That was a good movie.
Oh, man. Steve's on, out of sight. My brain's going.
Yeah. Speaking of actors, I guess, here's a fun, we were talking about True Detective. Here's a fact. Woody Harrelson was in True Detective. Everybody knows that. That's obviously a fact. But here's a fact about Woody Harrelson's dad. His name was Charles Voight Harrelson, and he was an assassin.
Whoa.
Yeah, Charles Voight Harrelson, born July 23rd, 1938, died March 15th, 2007, was an American organized crime figure who was convicted of assassinating federal judge John H. Wood Jr., the first federal judge killed in the 20th century.
Wow.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson's estranged father was an assassin, and yeah, he killed he was the 20th century John H. Wood Jr. was the first federal judge killed in the 20th century.
Wow, I always pictured Woody Harrelson kind of raised by, I don't know, like low-key hippie types.
Yeah, his dad wasn't one of those.
Wow, that's wild. He was amazing. As much as people talk about McConaughey, looking him up right now, as much as they talk about McConaughey, I thought Woody Harrelson like had him like, you know, scene for scene in that show. He was amazing.
I mean, Woody Harrelson's a, they're both phenomenal actors. And I mean, everybody was like, you know, McConaughey was amazing, but that's because he was a character, which Woody Harrelson was a character too, but McConaughey's was more of a, there was his volume was turned up higher versus his character was, I mean, anybody who can react as well as Woody Harrelson did to McConaughey's character, that's like, I mean, you need to be able to play that off, that this guy is saying all this crazy shit, and you need to, like, I mean, I agree completely. Like, Woody Harrelson's acting was just as phenomenal. Yeah, like, they're, I mean, they're going to be competing against each other in the Emmys.
And he, you know, he brought some humor to that, which I
absolutely
think the show needed. Well, it didn't need it because he brought it, but he's great. He was, what was the movie? It wasn't a great movie. It was a Paul Schrader movie, The Walker, that I saw with him in it. And he plays a, I think he's kind of a gay escort for like rich ladies in Washington, D.C. And he has a Southern drawl, and he was awesome in that. I saw that movie Rampart he was great in, even though that wasn't a great movie. He really stretches it. The Messenger.
I'll
name Woody Harrelson movies all day.
I will. I mean, yes. But, I mean, goddamn, Woody and Cheers is, like, Cheers is in my top five, is clearly in the top five funniest shows of all time.
It's amazing.
It's jokes every second. There's a joke every goddamn second in Cheers. And when Woody took over for Coach, it was so, like, the comedic timing, like, Woody Harrelson's comedic timing is just so phenomenal. He's very talented. He deserves every award he can get, if he can get awards.
I lived in Boston in the time of Cheers.
Okay.
And I remember when Cheers was going, and I remember going by there. I remember the first time going into the bar in the basement that is Cheers, the Bullfinch Pub, and being so disappointed that, you know, it doesn't look like Cheers. I mean, the decor, it's like wood-paneled walls, but it's not that set. Like, I was expecting the exact setup from the show. But I remember the last Cheers episode and like the newscasters, local news, like outside there, and how, you know, sad I was. Like, every character on that show was like a 10.
I
pictured my life. I wanted to be Sam Malone without the sports stuff. You know what I mean? The Black Book and just the whole lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the,
you know, I mean, reformed alcoholic.
Reformed alcoholic, not a practicing alcoholic. Yeah.
Sam Malone, man, he the ladies' man, the funny, the snarky, like, he was the guy's guy. He was like, you know, he was the guy's guy who ran a bar.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, he was, and Tom Selleck, not Tom Selleck,
Ted Danson
is, I'm a huge fan of Tom Selleck too. Like Magnum P.I. was such a good show too.
Magnum P.I. was huge. If the only shows that my family could agree on, because my brothers were a lot older, if we were going to watch TV together, it was either Magnum P.I. or old Rockford Files.
Okay, Rockford Files.
Now, recently I went back and looked at both, because I was trying to write this detective thing, and Magnum seemed a little weird. Like, the Vietnam flashbacks were weird, just it seemed a little disjointed. But Rockford Files was, like, held up. Those were, like one-hour movies.
Yeah.
And James Garner was just awesome. It's such a... They keep trying to remake it. Tried to remake it. I guess they shot a pilot with Dermot Mulroney.
Yep.
Now they're going to do a show with or a movie with Vince Vaughn.
Okay.
I guess as long as you're tall and like have broad shoulders, you can be Rockford. But there's nothing to re. The show just like exists on James Garner's charm, and like you know, he did some time in jail, and he wanted to go fishing with his dad, and he was always getting looped into some bullshit with like beautiful ladies. But he really just didn't, you know, the beauty of the show is like how little he cares about the cases.
Yeah, he doesn't.
It's great.
I've read somewhere they're trying to reboot Remington Steele with supposedly they're going to try and bring back Pierce Brosnan as well, which...
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Who knows?
No, would he be Remington, or would he be like the old boss that Remington has to answer to?
Yeah, right?
For the five people in the audience who like remember Remington Steele.
That's the problem, is, yeah, they're remaking all these shows, but all the baby boomers or people who even remember him or even remember him from reruns. I remember watching a lot of those shows on FX when it first came out. Like, FX had all those shows. It's point, like, I mean, Dallas is around, you know. Dallas, I don't know if they're still doing the reboot, but who are they making it for? Are they making it for those 55-year-olds who might watch it but don't exactly remember it? I mean, I get the nostalgia factor, mm-hmm. but there's got to be a time gap where rebooting something would be, like, you're rebooting a franchise that the audience wasn't. That'd be like rebooting 30 something.
Yeah.
You know, are you going to have, are you going to make it, are you going to make it 50 something and have I mean, my dad used to watch 30-something religiously, so he would probably watch 50-something. But even that is just like, what do you have? You got Timothy Busfield, and he's got, like, grandkids now. What's the, you know, there's only, like, you're trying to reboot a franchise that has such a big gap in the market that you're trying to captivize or captivate isn't exactly there anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think it's just ideas are so ephemeral that if there's something and it's pre-existing, it's so much easier to kind of get passed along the studio system. Like, they remade About Last Night.
Okay.
But it was a black cast.
Yes. But
I remember seeing it on the poster, and I was like, what is About Last Night? It took me, and then I was like, oh, right, the Rob Lowe movie.
Yeah.
There's no pre-existing audience, but somehow it just feels like there's maybe slightly less risk in doing it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Hollywood is out of ideas.
Now to switch gears completely, this podcast is going to air on Monday, which I believe is April 21st, which is number-wise 4/21. Now, yesterday, if you're listening to this on Monday, if you're not listening to this on Monday, a few days ago was Easter, or if you celebrate it or not, but what I'm getting at is it was 4/20. Now, a lot of people celebrate 4/20 as in a day to smoke marijuana. Somehow or another, 420, the numbers 420 became synonymous with just getting high and just partying out on weed, dope, whatever. Now, recently, Colorado legalized marijuana across the board, not just medicinally. And this is quite funny. Thieves, now on highways, there's mile markers, right? Telling you how far into the state you are or how much longer. Thieves have been stealing the 420 mile marker sign so often that the state's transportation department has changed it to 419.99. They changed the mile marker 420 to 419.99 in an effort to try to stop the problem. And for those of you in Colorado or near Denver, if you don't know about it or if you're driving cross country or whatever, it's located about 148 miles on Interstate 70 east of Denver. So on I-70, about 148 miles east out of Denver, you can see the mile marker 419.99. So I thought that was pretty funny.
If you are a kid with a 420 sign in your bedroom, you are a cool cat.
Yeah, so the 420 mile marker signs are going for a lot of money on eBay, probably. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
If you have one of those. So that's pretty funny. I guess potheads aren't lazy enough to steal things.
No, they'll steal. I remember stealing some signs as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was a case in, I think it was in Massachusetts, where the kids stole the stop sign, and then there was an accident and a fatality.
Oh, wow.
And somehow they knew who the kids were that stole the stop sign, and they pressed charges, and I think they got some light felony or some form of manslaughter, but it was like a big deal, a big case.
Oh, wow.
For you legal eagles out there who remember that better than I do.
That's
don't steal signs.
Especially stop signs. If you're going to steal a sign, steal a yield sign, because those are completely pointless. Yeah. Like, yields are like, what is the point of having a yield sign? Like, slow down, but keep going. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know what it means.
Here's something that's completely off topic and interesting. We like to be off topic and interesting, but this, the moon was recently the red moon. Everybody, the moon had an eclipse, and it turned red, as everybody knows and everybody's talking about. More than a dozen men have stood on the surface of the moon.
Wow.
Yep. But only three have been to Challenger Deep in the Marianas Trench, which is also known as the deepest spot in the ocean. So this is, I'm a huge advocate of space, and I'm a huge advocate of science. I'm a huge advocate of SpaceX, NASA, Elon Musk, all of that. But I'm also, the ocean intrigues the fuck out of me. The ocean is on our planet, and only three people have bothered to go to the deepest part. And the first,
and that's called Challenger Deep.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I always knew as the Marianas Trench. I knew what that is, but apparently, like, the deepest spot in that whatever is known as Challenger Deep. And the first was the first was the manned descent by Swiss designed, Italian built, United States Navy owned Bathyscape Trieste, which reached the bottom at 1:06 p.m. on January 23rd, 1960. So over a dozen men have been to the moon, and the first person, there's only been three to, this is what, like, just boggles my mind, is the fact that we've been on this planet for so long, and the first was in 1960 to go down to this deepest spot, right? And there was two people in there, right? So two out of the three people to go down to the deepest spot in the ocean, two out of the three were in 1960, okay? Their names were Don Walsh and Jacques Piccard. Those were two out of the three people in 1960. The third person was in 2012. And
what?
So not only is it's like, it's on our planet, and we're not discovering the ocean. Like, we're not even bothering to go down there. So there was, you know,
no one was down there.
There was a 72-year gap between when people actually wanted to go down and explore. Now, there was an unmanned exploration in 1996 and in 2009. But the fourth, there's been four expeditions down to this. So out of thousands of years on this planet, only four expeditions to go to the steepest spot have occurred. And the fourth... If people know what this is, but this puzzles me. I mean, it doesn't puzzle me because this guy's fucking awesome. Aristotle knows where I'm going with this. So there was three people have been down to the deepest spot on the planet in the ocean, right? Two people were there in 1960. One person was down there in 2012. And that one person that was down there in 2012 was director James Cameron.
Oh, wow.
Like, he's got the money and he's got the curiosity to be like, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to go down to the deepest spot in the ocean and explore.
And did he go in his own kind of
he had his own
vehicle?
Thing built. Yep. Let's see here. He reached the bottom of the Mariana Trench in the submersible vessel Deep Sea Challenger, which from what I remember reading, he invented. He didn't actually invent, but he had built for him. And that was made on March 26, 2012. He went down there. And this is how much balls James Cameron has. I read in an interview that he wants to go down there with, like, bait. Mm-hmm. He wants to go down there with, like, chicken to, like, hang out and see what comes. Now, that's always been one of my things is like, I wonder if scientists don't go down that far because they think, you know, it's too, like, A, we don't have the technology to go down there, which is silly because we also didn't have the technology to go to Mars, so just invent it. But I also wonder if there's, like, I'm a huge, like, conspiracy theorist to an extent. And what if there's, like, giant creatures down there that we have no clue about? So if you're just going around leaving chicken out everywhere, like, who's to say you're not going to get eaten or whatever?
I think James Cameron does have some big balls.
He's got, like, that's
awesome. I guess there's just something less sexy about, instead of, we're going to go to the moon, we're going to go to the bottom of the ocean. It just doesn't have the same...
Yeah.
Resonance or sexiness. Resonance. And it also, when I picture it, it just seems like it just must be completely black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did he make, like, an IMAX movie of that, or am I thinking of his Titanic movie? What did he do down there? When, I mean, he must have done some kind of...
Explored 2 feet in front of him. I don't know. I can't remember exactly what all he did down there, but for those of you curious, look it up and email us. But it was, Aristotle, do you know what he did down there? You're like, saying, like, you got stuff to say. I want to hear this.
Not James. Do you mind if I come over there?
Yeah. Come on over here. Join in the conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, this is, Aristotle, one of our producers on the show. He's a very talented individual, and he always is looking stuff up for us while we go, and he's a very intelligent guy.
I have a feeling we're going to get schooled.
We're going to get schooled with some shit here because he's way smarter than I am.
I've seen a few, not documentaries, but you know how on Discovery Channel they have the shows like Down at the Bottom of the Ocean. I saw an episode of one of those shows, and they talked about the same thing, and those first guys that went down... it took them a few years, I believe, to design the capsule strong enough. And down there at the bottom of the ocean...
Yep. According to 2009, it was 10,916 meters. That's how deep it was.
Yeah. The pressure is, I believe I could be getting this wrong, is like the weight of a tractor on every square inch of your body.
Okay.
Like, that's the amount of pressure that's down there. And it took them, I believe, about 3 hours to get down there in that capsule because they had to go down slowly to adjust the pressure. But what they didn't realize on the way down that there was a crack in the hole. And, like, somehow nothing came from that. There was just a crack. But had it gotten worse, they'd have just been crushed and pulverized into nothing. But I remember they also said, like, when they got to the bottom, they hit the ocean floor and dust clouded up their view. So they, like, it's hard enough to see down there.
Yeah.
There's dust in front of them, so they couldn't see anything.
Anything.
But they did manage to see, like, one small creature kind of pass by their little window, and that's how they discovered that life is possible down at that depth.
Yeah, because scientists are always like, oh, it's not life, it's too dark and too cold down there, or too hot.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's because life as we know it. I mean, there could be creatures down there. I mean, obviously there are creatures down there. But so it took them, so that was in 1960, then I guess it took them 72 years to even bother going down again or whatever?
James Cameron, I'm not sure. That one I saw on the news, that one was surprising.
I know, I want to know about this James Cameron venture. Did he just go down there by himself?
Well, yeah, it was, it was just him. So a 4-hour trip down there by himself in like a small submarine, submersible vehicle, and he's just... Look, you can't see anything. And even so, even if there's dust, even if you have like the brightest lights, there's still so many particles that you can only see like how bright are those lights to see in front of you.
Yeah, and it's only 4 hours. I guess it really does get a short shrift compared to the moon. I mean, the moon, you really got to commit.
It's like that's 13 adventure. Hours. Yeah, yeah. Come that's on,
like,
guys.
It's like driving to Vegas.
I was just going to say, it's like fucking drive to Vegas. You could go down to the ocean in the time it takes
anytime,
you to drive to Vegas.
Anytime.
And that, like...
All right, let's go.
Yeah, let's go. I happen to have that vehicle. Just cruise it out. Yeah. That's awesome. That's interesting. So that,
a good thing nothing happened to him, or we wouldn't have Avatar and all the crappy sequels that are now going to come out.
I read on James Cameron's Reddit AMA that supposedly he's going to finish the scripts for all three of them in the next 6 weeks or something like that. So I don't know if he's... like 3/4 done with all of them, and he's like, I don't know what that is. Yeah, like, that's kind of a big jump to finish.
Those scripts don't sound so hot.
No.
I have like serious anxiety. I love going to the movies and find it so relaxing, and I have anxiety that there's just going to be nothing for me to see, and that escape is going to end, and I'm not going to have that anymore.
Yeah, unless it's 3 hours of the Marianas Trench in 3D,
or that. That actually does sound kind of like relaxing.
I love all those things. Like, I was watching, I think it was the Lego movie or one of those movies, and one of the previews was, Madagascar lemurs or something like that. And it was a nature movie narrated by Morgan Freeman, and it was just these animals doing, like, it's like, goddamn, those are interesting. And I could watch those types of movies forever. So if James Cameron wanted to make a 3D IMAX movie of the bottom of the ocean, I would probably, you know, do that thing, you know, that Futurama shut up and take my money type of thing.
I'll watch anything. If Morgan Freeman is narrating, I'll watch it and I'll believe it.
Yeah. Speaking of animals, I guess here's a fun fact I have. We have a few listeners in South Africa. So I was trying to find some facts about South Africa or Africa or whatever. And I found some facts about the hippopotamus, which is very interesting to me. So I'll read some of these facts. They might be a little bit long, but they're really, really interesting. Hippopotamus or hippo is from the ancient Greek river horse. So that's where
I love that.
Yeah, that's
fucking, River Horse.
Yeah,
that's a great name.
Ancient Greek river. That sounds like a band name. River Horse. Playing Coachella next year. River Horse. Ladies and gentlemen from the depths of South African jungles.
There's got to be a River Horse. Aristotle, you checking out River Horse?
Is there a band, River Horse? Riverhorseband.com. They're a tribute band to Styx.
Some band that has Wolf in the title. Just make it River Horse just to mix it up a little bit.
There's a band called River Horse. What? Where are they from?
I found one from San Francisco.
Okay.
Let's see if these are the same.
River Horse. So there's multiple bands called River Horse. There, of course there is. But is there a band called Hippopotami? River Horses. horses are plural, right? Is it horse? A bunch of, yeah, horses.
Horses. If I was a hippopotamus, yeah, I'd be a little bent out of shape. That got river horse is kind of a bad ass name. Yeah. Hippopotamus,
hippopotamus
is a little nerdy. But
hey, I'm a hippopotamus. I'm a river horse. That's so funny. Get a tattoo of a hippopotamus, and when people ask, oh, what is that?
It's a river horse. It's a river horse.
I'm just going to start referring to them as river horses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I went to the San Diego Zoo. Took my nephew to the San Diego Zoo and checked out the river horses. The what? Oh, the river horses. So anyways, hippopotamus derives from the ancient Greek for river horse. After the elephant and rhinoceros, the river horse is the third largest type of land mammal and the heaviest extant artiodactyl. Despite their physical resemblance to pigs and other terrestrial even-toed ungulates, their closest living relatives are cetaceans, whales, and porpoises, from which they diverged 50 million years ago. Hippos, also known as river horses, have been clocked at, this is really fucking interesting, on land, over short distances, the river horse has been clocked at 19 miles per hour.
Wow.
Yeah, they're pretty fast.
How have I never seen that?
The
What do they run after? Because what do they kill? What do they eat?
They're we'll get to that.
I'm jumping
they're
the
just,
gun.
They're running. I guess if they're running from predators, they can outrun humans. They can outrun at 19 miles an hour over short distances. The river horse is one of the most aggressive creatures in the world, and as such, ranks among the most dangerous animals in Africa. Now I was reading. I don't have it on here, but I was reading when I was researching this. Most river horses eat grass. They'll go out into fields and they'll eat grass for like 4 to 5 hours at a night. And I read they can consume up to 150 pounds of grass a night. Wow. So they're not like meat eaters by any means. So they're not, running 19 miles an hour after meat or prey. That would, I guess, just be if they're, running from something or whatever. And a sleeping river horse underwater, rises and breathes without waking. The river horse closes. I'm, by the way, just so everybody knows what I'm doing, I'm, instead of reading hippo, I'm saying river horse, obviously.
Just for people just tuning for in people right tuning now, in we're right like, now, what is a river
what
horse?
What is a river horse?
And
what
where do this? I get one?
That's you got the seahorses, you got the river horses. A hippo closes its nostrils. The Kentucky Derby will now feature river horses. hippo closes its nostrils when it submerges into the water. As with fish and turtles on a coral reef, hippos occasionally visit cleaning stations and signal by opening their mouths wide their readiness for being cleaned of parasites by certain species and fish. This is an example of mutualism in which the hippo benefits from the cleaning while the fish receive the food. So over time, evolution has, the fish and the hippos have come to an agreement that if the hippo or river horse opens its mouth, the fish that consume bacteria and parasites will just go in and start licking off the hippo's mouth.
Wow.
Isn't that weird? Like, how does that, like, that's...
Yeah, how does that start?
Like
who was the first fish to nibble on that hippo plaque?
Yeah, who was the first fish to be like, oh, there's some food on that giant creature's mouth I'm going to go lick off.
I wonder what... Now, hippos, are they endangered? I feel like hippo is one of those things that I haven't been served at a restaurant, but it feels like at some point it's inevitable at some hipster restaurant there's going to be hippo tacos.
Yeah, I was reading, from what I remember reading, there's like a couple... hippopotami over there, but they've been hunted because I guess their teeth are also ivory, from what I remember. I could be wrong, but they've been hunted for that.
Okay,
and I was reading also that they have the ability to get sunburn, which is one reason why they stay underwater and just have their noses up above water a lot of times.
Oh,
because
God.
It's so hot and
it's so cute. I love these guys.
Yeah, so that was really interesting. I thought that was pretty neat. Hippopotamus, the river horse. Animals intrigue me too, like the evolution concept of just how there's so many. I mean, there's just big creatures like that, like 19 miles an hour, and they're vegetarian. Like,
that's crazy.
Yeah,
They're so much more advanced.
Yeah,
and we can't run nearly as fast.
No.
And I'm stuffing garbage in my face.
Bolt? Yeah.
Now, do you have an animal?
I do not. I'm not. Okay. I enjoy animals
from afar.
From afar, yeah. I'm a dog person, but when it's other people's dogs.
Okay.
I'm allergic to cats.
Me too.
So I can't have any cats or anything like that. But I like creatures. I like animals. Like I have mixed feelings about the zoo.
Me too. I went to the San Diego Zoo last year.
Same here.
Had the time of my life, but at the same time felt really guilty.
Same here.
Didn't even get into it. I had a few hours to kill in San Diego, and I was like, I'm going to this fucking zoo by myself and I'm going to rock out.
Yeah.
It was great.
Like it's,
but it was bad.
Yeah. Like, I really want to go on a African safari, and none of my friends want to go, or none of my family wants to go. And I want to go, like, it intrigues me. I joke around about fearing for my life, but I want to see these animals in their habitat. As much as I hate bugs and mosquitoes and all that, which those places are full of them, I want to see a hippo, I want to see a river horse doing his thing, oblivious to what we're doing. Like, I want to see a river horse doing its thing because that's where it is, that's what it does.
I'll go.
We're just intruding. I want to intrude on all these other creatures' lifestyles.
We got to go to the bottom of the ocean.
Yep.
Safari to see a hippopotamus, then back to... You need the New Orleans that you never got.
Yep, I need a New Orleans I never got, and I want to see Machu Picchu.
Okay,
that's on my list too. Because they're gonna be closing it down soon, Machu Picchu. Because it's getting so traversed, and like the weather and everything is wearing it down. They're gonna. I was reading that they're gonna.
Damn,
close
that's
it down.
Like that's like Cuba.
I know.
You know, we got to get to all these places.
Yeah, Tokyo. I want to get to Tokyo too.
I definitely want to get to Tokyo. Although I guess they're not closing Tokyo. That'll be around.
Yeah. Well, providing that there's not another earthquake. My buddies were gonna go a few years ago. Like, they had their tickets booked and everything, and then that earthquake happened like 3 weeks before they were going to go, and everything was flooded, and they're like, God damn, they could have still went, but everything would have been shut down and hellish.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to go for like tourist fun when things are in shambles.
Now, do you like the beach at all? Do you go to the beach? Are you a beach person?
I do like the beach, and I feel almost alone in that. Living on the east side, I have a lot of friends who never seem to visit the beach. They are victims of that east side, west side prejudice. Just like my west side friends don't come over to my side of town. I love the beach, and when I'm it's a pain in the ass to get there. But even just going to Venice Beach just to feel the breeze. I mean, if you're really going to get into the beach, you drive to Malibu or something. Yeah. I love it. I'm a beach fan.
See, I'm not a huge beach fan. I don't like sand. Mm-hmm. I don't like the taste of salt water in my mouth. But I understand completely what you mean because I live somewhat on the west side. I live in Culver City over there.
So you get a taste where you get that nice beach breeze.
I'm like 6 miles from the beach, so I get the cool air and all that. I understand a lot of, like, I'm from the Midwest. And driving isn't a thing to me. Like, I can, a 20-minute drive across town is nothing to me because I'm used to that. It's still, you know, that's where you need to be or whatever. But a lot of people, you know, a lot of my friends on the east side or whatever will not come that way, or they just disdain commuting. So I understand that respect. But the beach, a lot of... Like, when you go to the beach, do you play games or do you just hang out? Or
no, I'm more like I'm a guy. I bring some stuff to read at the beach. I find it very relaxing. Yeah. If I go to like an out of the way beach, I'll bring the dog.
Okay.
I wish I'm a horrible athlete.
So you're a dog person.
I am a dog person.
What's your dog's name?
I brought the dog up because someone just tweeted at me a picture of their dog who is a dead ringer for my dog Snacks.
Okay.
So this other dog, Lucky, lives in Glendale, so we're gonna have a little dog date.
Oh, nice.
But I was on what they were like separated at birth. Except
dog old gangers.
Hold on, let me write down that hashtag. I'll give you credit.
No, you don't need it.
I'm obsessed with my dog. He's amazing. He comes to the Marin office. Yeah. There was a little controversy. He ate somebody's salad this year, but usually he's good. He does a little acting. He's a jack of all trades.
Do you ever throw a frisbee at your dog? Does your dog do any of that?
Yeah, he'll do a little frisbee. He'll do a little frisbee. He hasn't quite mastered fetch. Like, he'll bring it back to me, but then kind of drop it, not right to me. But he's good. He plays dead.
He plays dead. He can really do some great tricks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as we're wrapping up here, I got a fun fact. It's getting summer season. It's getting spring season.
It's
getting bikini season. Mm-hmm. It's no longer. I made a joke the other day. It's no longer sweater season. It's now workout season.
I prefer sweater season.
Sweater season. Yeah,
the more I can hide this.
I don't know, man. It's getting sundress season, and I'm a huge fan of women in sundresses. But anyways, here's a fun fact about the Frisbee here. Everybody's played with a Frisbee. Everybody knows about Frisbee. Everybody's seen Back to the Future 3 where he looks at the pie tin and it says Frisbee. The Frisbee was originally called the Whirl-Away. And then the name changed to Pluto Platter before initially being named Frisbee by Wham-O, the company everybody knows by Wham-O. But anyways, Fred Morrison is the gentleman who invented the Frisbee. Fred Morrison discovered a market for the modern-day flying disc in 1938 when he and future wife Lucille were offered 25 cents for a cake pan they were tossing back and forth on the beach in Santa Monica, California.
A cake pan?
Yeah,
wow.
Cake pan.
Oh, okay, I guess I see how that would work.
So eventually Morrison sketched a design for an aerodynamically improved flying disc that he called the Whirl Away. And by 1948, after design modifications and experimentation with several prototypes, Morrison and business partner Warren Francione began producing the first plastic discs, renaming them Flying Saucer in the wake of the reported unidentified flying object sightings. Now, in 1955, Morrison and his partner split up and some other stuff occurred. Morrison designed a new model in 1955, which he later named the Pluto Platter. The archetype of all modern flying discs. So essentially in 1955, the shape and design of the Frisbee is, that's the design he had. The modern Frisbee mm-hmm. was invented in 1955, and it went by Pluto Platter. He then sold the rights to Wham-O on January 23rd, 1957. Now, that was in January, Wham-O acquired the rights to the Frisbee. In June of 1957, Wham-O co-founder Richard Knurr decided to stimulate sales by giving the discs an additional brand name.
Something sexier.
Something sexy. The Pluto Platter wasn't exactly yeah. selling, so they had a, you know, they got in their Shark Tank or they got in their think tank and they're like, what, we need a brand for this. We need to brand this. So the additional brand name was Frisbee after learning that Northeastern college students were calling the Pluto Platter by that name, but only because the term Frisbee came from the name of the Bridgeport, Connecticut pie manufacturer, Frisbee Pie Company. Now, Frisbee is spelled F-R-I-S-B-E-E. That's the brand name that Wham-O gave it. That's what the college students were calling it. But the Frisbee Pie Company is F-R-I-S-B-I-E, Pie Company. So I guess somehow or another, it's almost like Kleenex, I guess, when you know you have the thing and everybody just calls everything a Kleenex. So Wham-O got the name Frisbee from the pie company.
And some snobby college kids,
some stone college kids
can stop thinking about pie.
Yeah.
Huh, that is interesting.
And wow, they refuse Frisbee. To call it the Pluto Platter. You can't pick up chicks on a college campus saying, hey, do you want to throw the Pluto Platter?
Yeah, Pluto Platter doesn't roll off the tongue.
No.
Frisbee's great. Did you ever play Frolf? Were you a Frolf guy? I tried and I was really bad.
I don't have good aim. I've never played it. I have friends who've played it. Yeah. I had a roommate who used to play it. Now, this is a funny story, too. Like, I had an old roommate who was huge into it, but he was an idiot. Like, he was dumb. He was dumb. Like, he was a nice kid, but he was dumb as a box of rocks. He played disc golf. He played Frolf. And he had a team. This is how stupid this is. Now, football players, when they have a game, they'll carb load. They'll eat a bunch of carbs the night before, so their body will digest it, and it'll give them energy. Your body will store the carbohydrates and the energy, so that way you're great on the field, and you have a lot of energy and stamina for the field. My roommate and his Frisbee team, his disc golf team, wanted to do this, right? But I come home one day in the middle of the day, and his team's just having a huge pasta fest at my house, and they're carb loading, and I'm like, "Oh, you guys got a frisbee game, huh?" And not only is it absurd that they're carb loading to throw a frisbee around, but they were carb loading hours before the game.
Now, did everyone just have the munchies? Was it that kind of scenario?
I don't know, because it's like, and they ended up obviously losing the game because if you carb load, that's going to make you tired.
Yeah.
So you can't carb load hours before the game. You got to carb load the night before. So they were having a huge pasta fest hours before they were going to go throw a frisbee around.
Wow, I've never intentionally carb loaded before. Yeah. I guess I've unintentionally done it to unbutton my pants and watch Netflix. I've never really done it to get energy.
Yeah. That's weird. Let alone to do it hour. I mean, when you carb load, you fall asleep like right away. You know, because it's
your roommate needed you as the Frolf coach.
Yeah. It's like, come on, guys, you're doing it like. So they're like, oh no, it's in a couple hours, and I'm just like, I was on the football team in high school. I didn't play. I was on the team.
Yeah.
But I sat around a lot. I was the practice dummy.
You were all carb loaded up on the bench.
I was still eating pasta as they're playing.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's we're approaching our time.
I feel like I've learned a lot.
Done. Yeah.
I learned some facts.
Fun facts.
From Rockwell to Harrelson to Safari.
Yeah, some fun facts. Duncan, first off, I want to thank you for doing the show.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having
and
me.
And at the end of the show, we like to have our guests sell themselves to the audience. So anything you got coming up, anything they can find you, where can they find you, what do you got coming up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like anytime I say et cetera, I feel like Willy Wonka when he's like, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'll keep it real simple. Please watch Marin. The season one is on Netflix right now, and season two is going to pop up on IFC May 8th. And we got a great season, 13 episodes. It's awesome. I'm not even going to get into all the awesome guest stars we have. Because we have tons.
I think most of them
are in the there are a few I'm not supposed to say, but I think your overlord Chris Hardwick is in a very funny episode. We got Sarah Silverman. Dave Anthony is back as Mark's buddy, and Andy Kindler as his pal, and one of my favorites, Eddie Pepitone.
Oh, he's a good guy.
And let me just think of one. It's not a secret. CM Punk is on it, I know a lot of people saw him in the preview and they're like, what the fuck is this? Wearing this?
What's
CM Punk up to? So he was one I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And everybody, he was, the whole crew was so excited when he came. Yeah, now I know. He was super cool.
One of the, he's not anymore, but he was the World Wrestling Heavyweight Champion of the World at one point for WWE. He's one of the biggest superstars. He's like Hulk Hogan was in the 80s. CM Punk is one of the mainstays of the WWE right now. He's a really cool dude.
He was a very cool guy. Yeah,
really nice guy. Yeah. He's a huge nerd, too.
Yeah, he was awesome. It's funny. One day, because we have filming two episodes at once, and we just had, and it can be like a really interesting talk show sometimes at lunch because you have all these different guest stars. So one time in the fake living room of Mark's house, as we're filming these different scenes, it was just such an odd scene. We had David Cross, Judd Hirsch, and Sally Kellerman and CM Punk, they're all sitting there, and it was a very surreal telling stories, trading old Hollywood stories and stuff.
It was awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And so those come out. So you film two at once all the time, or just while you're using certain sets?
We always film two at once. It's a very, very fast pace. We film two episodes every 6 days.
Oh, wow.
So we're always kind of juggling two at once. And
so whoever does a breakdown of those shot lists must be. Yeah, that's confusing. Goddamn.
We got a great crew that works really hard.
Give that girl a medal, whoever it is. Yeah.
It's a great crew, and obviously Mark has to is in every scene, so he's got quite a bit to memorize juggle.
Yeah.
But it's really fun, and hopefully we'll be back for season three.
Does he wear the same clothes every day? Because that's a lot of costume changing if you're doing two episodes at once.
It can be very complicated, especially, he does these, the podcasts, these scripted podcasts, and it's very difficult to figure out which shirt goes with which podcast, because the podcast can kind of be timeless. We can move them around episodes. So, it gets a little tricky. But
that's fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to film. We film it in pretty much Highland Park, like York Boulevard is like our back lot. And Mark has good relations with everybody in the neighborhood. Okay. So, Cafe de Leche is his coffee shop, and that's his coffee shop on the show. So I'm sure it's very surreal for him to drive from his real house to his fake house a half mile away every day.
Yeah.
But it's really fun. I think we got a pretty good episode. Josh Bremer, who I've been watching on Silicon Valley, is back as his assistant. And
that's awesome.
Mark gets into some trouble this season.
May 8th, Marin, IFC.
May 8th. And otherwise, I'm just on Twitter. We're buddies. Duncan Berm.
Duncan Berm.
B-I-R-M.
D-U-N-C-A-N-B-I-R-M.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for doing this. And as usual, you can follow me at My Name is Razzle2. You can follow Dan at OsteoFerocious. You can follow the podcast at TWL Podcast. You can send us an email, twlpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook, Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan. Once again, we want to thank everybody for listening. Feel free to give us a good rating on iTunes. Give us a 4-star, 5-star, 3-star rating on iTunes. Leave a comment. Share these with your friends. If you have a favorite podcast, tell your friend to listen to it. Tell your friend to subscribe. We want to thank everybody for listening. As usual, we say it every day, but we really appreciate it. And as always, knowledge is power, and hoverboards don't work over water without power. So tell your friends and have a great week. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Duncan.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.